Welcome to A-Level Psychology Unlocked, your go-to podcast for WJE exam success. I'm your host, and today we are diving deep into one of the most fascinating and high-value topics on the specification, stress. Whether you're revising for your AS or A2 papers, this episode is packed with everything you need: the biology, the research, the management strategies, and the exam technique to turn your knowledge into marks. So grab a pen, get comfortable, and let's get started. Let's begin with why stress matters so much, both in real life and in your exam. Stress is not just a feeling, it is a complex physiological and psychological response that has evolved over millions of years to keep us alive. But in the modern world, the same system that helped our ancestors escape predators is now triggered by exam deadlines, relationship problems, and work pressures. And when that system is activated too often or for too long, it can seriously damage our health. That is exactly what the research in this topic explores, and exactly what WJE examiners want you to understand in depth. Now, let's get into the core content. We'll start with the two key biological stress response systems, the SAM system and the HPA axis. These are the foundation of everything else in this topic, so make sure you know them cold. The SAM system stands for the sympathome-idolary pathway. This is your body's immediate, rapid response to a stressor, what we call the acute stress response. Here's how it works. When you perceive a threat, your hypothalamus activates the sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system. This sends signals directly to the adrenal medulla, that's the inner part of the adrenal glands, which sit on top of your kidneys. The adrenal medulla then releases two key hormones into the bloodstream, adrenaline and noradrenaline. These hormones trigger what we call the fight or flight response. Your heart rate increases, your breathing speeds up, your pupils dilate, blood is diverted away from digestion and towards your muscles, and you become hyper alert. This all happens within seconds. And critically, once the threat passes, the parasympathetic nervous system kicks in to restore the body to its resting state, what we call the rest and digest response. Now here's the key distinction that examiners love to test. The SAM system is fast, neural, and short-lived. It involves the sympathetic nervous system directly stimulating the adrenal medulla. Keep that pathway crystal clear in your mind. The HPA axis is a completely different system, and it handles chronic stress, that is, stress that persists over time. HPA stands for hypothalamic pituitary adrenal. Let's trace the pathway step by step. When stress is prolonged, the hypothalamus releases a chemical messenger called CRF that stands for corticotropin releasing factor. CRF travels to the anterior pituitary gland, which responds by releasing ACTH, adrenocorticotropic hormone, into the bloodstream. ATH then travels through the blood to the adrenal cortex. That's the outer layer of the adrenal glands. The adrenal cortex responds by releasing cortisol, a glucocorticoid hormone. Cortisol has several important effects. It increases blood glucose levels to provide sustained energy, it has anti-inflammatory effects, and crucially for this topic, it causes immunosuppression. That means it suppresses the immune system. This is why chronic stress makes us more vulnerable to illness. There is also a negative feedback loop. When cortisol levels are high enough, they signal back to the hypothalamus and pituitary to reduce CRF and ACTH production, bringing the system back into balance. A great memory hook for the HPA axis is: hungry puppies always cry. Hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal cortex, and the C is for cortisol. Say it a few times. Hungry puppies always cry. Now let's talk about the research that links stress to illness, specifically immunosuppression. The landmark study here is Kuechel-Glaser et al., 1984. This is a study you absolutely must know in detail for WJEC. Kuechel-Glaser and her colleagues studied 75 first-year medical students at Ohio State University. They took blood samples 1 month before their final exams, that's the low-stress baseline, and then again during the exam period itself when stress was high. They measured the activity of natural killer cells in the blood. Natural killer cells are a key part of the immune system. They attack viruses and tumors. The results showed a significant reduction in natural killer cell activity during the exam period compared to the baseline. This provides direct evidence that academic stress causes immunosuppression via the HPA axis and elevated cortisol. The study also found that students who reported higher levels of loneliness showed even greater immunosuppression, suggesting that social support acts as a buffer against stress. For evaluation, you should note that this study used an objective biological measure, natural killer cell activity, which gives it good scientific validity. However, it was conducted on a specific sample, young, healthy medical students. This limits its generalizability to other populations. You should also note that blood samples only capture a snapshot in time, and individual differences in stress perception were not fully controlled. Now let's move on to individual differences in stress, specifically personality types. The key framework here is the type A and type B personality distinction developed by Friedman and Rosenman in the 1970s. Type A individuals are characterized by time, urgency, competitiveness, hostility, and impatience. They are always rushing, always competing, and often feel angry or frustrated. Type B individuals, by contrast, are more relaxed, patient, and less driven by deadlines and competition. Friedman and Rosenman proposed that type A behavior was a significant risk factor for cardiovascular disease, specifically coronary heart disease. Their key study, the Western Collaborative Group Study, followed over 3,000 men aged 39 to 59 in California over 8.5 years. They assessed personality type through structured interviews and then tracked health outcomes. The results showed that type A men were twice as likely to develop coronary heart disease compared to type B men, even after controlling for other risk factors like smoking and diet. This was a hugely influential finding. However, you need to evaluate this carefully. The study only used male participants, which limits its generalizability to women. Later research has also suggested that it is specifically the hostility component of type A, not the time, urgency, or competitiveness, that is most strongly linked to cardiovascular disease. This is an important nuance that examiners will credit. Another key individual difference concept is hardiness, developed by Kobasa in 1979. Hardiness is a personality characteristic that acts as a buffer against stress. It has three components, which you can remember with the three C's: commitment, control, and challenge. Commitment means having a sense of purpose and engagement with life. Hardy individuals are deeply involved in what they do. Control refers to believing that you can influence events and outcomes, an internal locus of control. Challenge means viewing change and difficulty as opportunities for growth rather than threats. Kobasa studied business executives and found that those who remained healthy despite high stress levels scored significantly higher on these three dimensions. Hardy individuals, she argued, appraise stressors differently. They see them as manageable challenges rather than overwhelming threats. Now let's turn to stress management. WJAT requires you to understand and evaluate both biological and psychological approaches. Let's cover the main ones. Starting with biological approaches. Beta blockers are a class of drugs that work by blocking the effects of adrenaline and noradrenaline on the heart and blood vessels. They reduce heart rate, lower blood pressure, and reduce the physical symptoms of anxiety. They are commonly prescribed for performance, anxiety, hypertension, and some cardiac conditions. The advantage of beta blockers is that they act quickly and are effective at reducing the physiological symptoms of stress. However, they do not address the underlying psychological cause of stress. They can have side effects, including fatigue and cold extremities, and they can become a crutch. Patients may not develop their own coping skills. Benzodiazepines are another biological approach. These are anti-anxiety drugs that enhance the effect of GABA, an inhibitory neurotransmitter in the brain, producing a calming effect. However, they carry a significant risk of dependency and withdrawal symptoms, which limits their long-term use. Now for the psychological approach. Stress inoculation therapy, or SIT, developed by Donald Meichenbaum in 1985. This is a cognitive behavioral approach to stress management that works in three phases. Phase one is conceptualization. The therapist and client work together to identify the sources of stress and how the client currently thinks about and responds to them. The client learns to understand their stress response. Phase two is skills acquisition and rehearsal. The client learns a range of coping skills. These include relaxation techniques, cognitive restructuring, changing negative thought patterns, problem-solving strategies, and social skills training. These skills are practiced in a safe therapeutic environment. Phase three is application and follow-through. The client applies these skills to progressively more challenging stressors, starting with imagined scenarios and moving to real-life situations. The idea is that by being gradually exposed to stress while equipped with coping tools, the client becomes inoculated against future stress, just like a vaccine inoculates against disease. SIT has good research support. Meichenbaum found it effective for a range of stress-related problems. However, it is time-consuming and expensive compared to drug treatments. It also requires significant motivation and commitment from the client and may not be suitable for individuals in acute crisis who need immediate relief. Now, let's move into exam tips and common mistakes. This is where I want you to really tune in because these points can be the difference between a grade B and a grade A. Mistake number one, confusing the SAM and HPA pathways. This is the most common error examiners see. Remember, SAM is fast, neural, involves the sympathetic nervous system and the adrenal medulla, and releases adrenaline. HPA is slow, hormonal, involves CRF, ACTH, and the adrenal cortex, and releases cortisol. Write those two pathways out from memory until you can do it perfectly every time. Mistake number two, describing type A personality without linking it to the cardiovascular mechanism. Saying type A people are competitive and get heart disease will not get you high marks. You need to explain the mechanism that the chronic activation of the SAM system in type A individuals, particularly through hostility, leads to sustained elevated blood pressure, arterial damage, and increased risk of atherosclerosis. That is the kind of physiological explanation that earns AO1 marks. Mistake number three, generic ethics evaluation. If a question asks you to evaluate a stress management therapy, do not just write, "It raises ethical issues." Be specific. For example, with drug treatments, you might discuss the ethical issue of informed consent. Patients may not fully understand the risk of dependency when prescribed benzodiazepines. Or with SIT, you might discuss the ethical issue of competence. Therapists must be properly trained to deliver this intervention safely. Mistake number four, ignoring AO2 application marks. WGEXE questions often include a scenario, for example, describing a person who is experiencing stress at work. If the question asks you to apply your knowledge, you must explicitly reference the details in the scenario. Do not give a generic answer. Say something like, "In this scenario, James's experience of long working hours and job insecurity represents a chronic stressor, which would activate the HPA axis, leading to sustained cortisol release and potential immunosuppression." For discuss questions, which are worth the most marks, remember the AO1 and AO3 split. WJEC weights AO1 at 40% and AO3 at 40%, with AO2 at 20%. So for a 20-mark discuss question, you need roughly equal amounts of accurate description and critical evaluation. Use the Peel structure for your evaluation paragraphs. Point, make your evaluative claim, evidence, cite a specific study with details, explain what the evidence shows and why it supports or challenges the theory. Link back to the question. Now for our quickfire recall quiz, I'll ask a question, pause for a few seconds, and then give you the answer. Ready? Question one. What does HPA stand for, and what hormone does each stage release? Pause. The answer is hypothalamus releases CRF, pituitary releases ACTH, adrenal cortex releases cortisol. Question two, what are the three C's of hardiness? Pause. Commitment, control, and challenge. Question three, name the study that provided evidence for stress-induced immunosuppression and state one key finding. Pause. Kuechel-Glaser et al., 1984, medical students showed reduced natural killer cell activity during exam periods compared to a low-stress baseline. Question 4. What are the three phases of stress inoculation therapy? Pause. Conceptualization, skills acquisition and rehearsal, and application and follow-through. Question 5. What is the key criticism of the Friedman and Rosenman type A study? Pause. The sample was all male, limiting generalizability. Also, later research suggests hostility, not type A as a whole, is the key cardiovascular risk factor. And now for our summary and sign-off. Today we've covered the two stress response pathways, SAM for acute stress and HPA for chronic stress. We've explored the evidence for stress-induced immunosuppression through Kuechel-Glaser. We've looked at individual differences through type A and B personality in Kobasa's hardiness model. And we've evaluated biological approaches, beta blockers and benzodiazepines, alongside the psychological approach of stress inoculation therapy. The key to success in this topic is precision. Know your pathways cold, know your studies in detail, sample sizes, procedures, findings, and limitations, and always, always evaluate with specific evidence rather than vague generalizations. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing past papers, and remember, stress is not just a topic you're studying. Understanding it might just help you manage your own exam stress too. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode of A-Level Psychology Unlocked.